paper, and he's going to tell us about the space of integrable quantum Lie series.
All right, thank you very much. Again, it's my pleasure to have this opportunity to give a talk again. I feel that I'm falling in the habit of giving talks here. All right, anyways, I want to report on some work, which is joint work with Fyodor Smirnov, and it basically, as the title suggests, it concerns some general statement about integrable field theories in two dimensions. All right, so basically the question which we try to address here is how, so we have a space of two-dimensional quantum field theories, which I denote, this is more or less in the same sense as, so there is a space which I denote sigma, that is what is often called a theory space, that space of field theories, and I will assume at this point there is an interesting question, interesting and important question: what exactly it means, the space of field theories. But well, for most part, I will ignore it. Maybe come back a little bit later at the end of the talk. So we want to know how the space of integrable subspace of integrable field theories resides in this space for many reasons, including the fact that by searching nearby given a field theory, by searching nearby integrable field theory, we could try to figure out some physics of the field theory and so forth. So what I'm going to speak about is like local analysis. So if I assume that the space of as usual is assumed that the space of local fields is a tangent space, it can be thought of as a tangent space to space of local field theories, then if I have a subspace which I denote sigma integrable subspace of integrable field theories, the tangent to that subspace is a subspace of the tangent to the field theories, and this subspace is spanned by local fields, which if you perturb with those fields, this perturbation preserves integrability. So it's in the same sense as exactly marginal operators form tangent to the space of conformal field theories. So we want to understand infinitesimal perturbations which preserve integrability. There is a summary of the result which I spell here. It turns out that there are infinitely many such integrable deformations, and something which is probably close to complete basis in this space, tangent space, can be explicitly constructed in terms of local currents associated with higher integrals of motion. I will, if time permits, I will say a few words about form factors associated with this special integrable operators. All right, so let me get to the business, let me just first establish a playground. I'm going to talk about two-dimensional space-time. I will use the Euclidean language for field theory. So my space is R2, points are denoted by Z. And I will also use Z and Z bar for associated complex coordinates, as shown here. So it's flat space, so okay. And Z, all right, G is standard complex coordinates there. So this, the quantum field theory, I will mostly understand it in abstract sense as a collection of, as a, some infinite dimensional space of local fields and collection of associated correlation functions which satisfy certain properties. I will mention some properties in the, when needed, but most importantly, I will assume the, that the fields form operator product expansion algebra as shown here. All right, so in principle, one may or may not think in terms of Lagrangian field theory and assume that there is some collection of fundamental fields and then path integral behind all this thing with some action which depends on the fundamental fields, derivatives, and so forth. Well, usually this is assumed to be equipped with some ultraviolet regularization, and I will usually assume that there is some ultraviolet regularization behind this field theory, for most part of the talk, I will ignore the question if the theory is truly renormalizable. So if the regularization can be removed, is the limit epsilon going to zero, the cutoff distance going to zero, any meaningful limit exists.
Are you assuming the Lagrangian is polynomial?
I'm not even assuming Lagrangian.
I
said before that I will understand field theory as a collection of correlation functions subject to operator product expansion algebra and some a little bit more conditions which I...
So maybe let me rephrase the question.
Yes.
To what extent do you think the restriction to polynomial Lagrangians is a significant
problem? I'm thinking in terms of the space of field theories, right? And then, of course, there is no restriction. You have to assume all quasi-local interactions, like in exactly in the
polynomial or not.
You only want them to be quasi-local in the same sense as Kogut and Wilson explain in their work. So it's exactly the playground of Wilson's renormalization group. Okay, but this is if you want to think in terms of Lagrangians. But I mostly will not refer to it, with exception of one property which I abstract from Lagrangian approach, or equivalently, I could abstract from any approach which involves an action, and that is the notion of coupling constants as coordinates in this space of field theories, I will sort of postulate this sort of deformation formula, which of course is obvious in any Lagrangian approach, is that if you have some coordinates gi on this space, and you make a variation of these coordinates, the variation of correlation function is basically related to integral of some field associated with this coordinate. There are some local terms, what I call local terms here, which involve variations of the fields themselves with respect to the coordinates, and also involve some counter terms if needed in order to compensate for potential divergence of this integral. All right, and it is in exactly in this sense that I say that the space of local fields is a tangent to the space of field theories. Well, in fact, I need to be more precise. If I want to preserve Lorentz invariance or rotational invariance, I have to isolate a subspace of scalar fields. And also, I can ignore total derivatives. So this, the tangent, in fact, is a vector space of the subspace of spinless fields over the what I call DF, which is space spanned by total derivatives. Okay? This is going to be important. All right. Yeah, there is subtlety with locality, which I am not going to discuss at the moment at length, is of course, if I want to consider field theories which are truly local, which admit a limit epsilon at a cutoff to zero, of course, this the space of such field theories is much more complicated, and arbitrary deformation, of course, would break this this sort of renormalizability of the theory. But at the moment, I will ignore this at the, up to probably some end of the talk, I will ignore this problem. Fortunately, the problem of integrability can be remarkably can be untangled from this more complicated question. So in any way, so I'm going to look at the space of integrable field theories and associated tangent spaces as all right, so what I'm going to produce is explicit characterization of this tangent space. So I'm going to list infinitely many basic vectors in the subspace. There is explicit construction for that in terms of associated densities of associated with components of the currents associated with higher integrals of motion. So let me just, I'm not going to define integrable field theories for you because I don't know definition. I mean, probably everyone does, but I don't. anyways, there is at least a paradigm of integrability which includes a statement of infinite number of local integrals of motion. So there are infinitely many conserved quantities, which I denote P sub S here. And they are integrals of local densities. Local densities are T and theta here. And those are components of currents which satisfy continuity equation, which I write in this complex coordinates in this convenient form convenient to my purposes. So something derivative of one field over Z bar is the same as the derivative over Z. And that that guarantees that the integral, if you take it over some contour in Euclidean space, the integral doesn't change under trivial deformations of the contour. And that is the meaning of integral of motion. Moreover, I will assume, there are infinitely many of them. They are labeled by this index S. And I will assume that, for simplicity, basically, that this S has a relation to the spin of the associated current. So T sub S plus 1 has a spin S plus 1, theta S minus 1 has a spin S minus 1. And so this condition respects rotational invariance, this continuity equation. Now, the values which the spins of integrals of motion take is generally can be different for different integrable theories, and it's some characteristic of integrable field theory or class of integrable theory. Now, it will be convenient, although not necessary, but will be convenient to now the set of the spins which I have here is some subset of half integers, because I assume that the currents are local. They can be bosonic or fermionic, but it involves plus positive and negative values. It will be convenient to introduce separate notations for negative spins. So I just denote T with negative S as theta bar, and theta with negative spin as T bar. So the continuity equation is written in spatial inversion in the form which is spatial inversion of this. Of the first equation. All right, so there are p bar associated integrals of motion. Now, next, another part of the paradigm is. All right, so let me just simply state what it means in terms of correlation function. If I have any correlation function of this kind, if I integrate it over some contour which can be continuously deformed to zero, then this integral vanishes. Okay, that's the meaning of integral of motion. Now, another part of paradigm, as I said, is that this integrals of motion form commuting set. Usually this is formulated in terms of going to some Hamiltonian picture, Hamiltonian quantization with space of states operators. This is not necessary. It can be formulated in terms of correlation function, of course, but to be short, I just say that the meaning of it is that something which I call commutators of this operators P with densities are itself derivatives of certain fields, local fields. This A and B are local fields, so that if I integrate over the coordinates in this form as here, this combines into a total derivative and gives zero. Now the commutators of these operators with local fields are just by definition the contour integrals of associated densities over some small circle. Some small circle surrounding the point Z here. All right, so this is standard thing in Euclidean field theory here, but we assume that there are infinitely many of such local currents. And given this set of currents, I can construct certain special scalar fields, scalar spinless fields, which I denote X sub S. And they are given by this limit that you form this combination and then send one point to another. Generally one could say, all right, that's something which is not legitimate to do because this operator product is generally singular when the points approach each other, and so a limit doesn't exist or not unique or whatever. It turns out that this, for this particular combination, the limit is trivial if you ignore total derivatives. So if you think in terms of this space F hat, which is space of fields modular total derivatives, the limit is trivial. And that statement follows from some trivial lemma, which says that if I take two fields and the product of two fields and apply this derivative, that is the associated cooperator product expansion consists of total derivatives. So that's absolutely trivial. If I just look at the operator product expansion here, I see that this combination of derivatives hit only the fields. So this is trivial lemma, but it becomes interesting when you combine it with some simple but remarkable identity. If I take this combination, which I want to consider, and take a derivative of it, and use just the continuity equation, it's easy to check this identity that it becomes a total derivative. All right? And that applies to both z bar and z. And so it follows that this combination over here, all right, so it is annihilated by all derivatives over z. It doesn't depend on z except for some derivatives, right? So there is a single non-derivative term with the coefficient which doesn't depend on z minus z prime, okay? And the operator which accompanies this term, by definition it's spinless, and it's also it's scalar operator and gives the definition of this field X sub S. All right. So this gives a definition of the field, and it remains to show that this field defined this way represents integrable deformation. Okay. Before proving this, let me just first show that for any conserved charge P sub sigma, the commutator with any of these local fields is zero up to total derivatives, and that's relatively easy to check. Again, commutator is defined here. And to see that, I mean, I replace X by its point splitted version as in the definition of that field. So I take if I take limit z to z prime here, then it becomes X sub S. But I take commutator before the limit. And because they're a product of terms z and z prime, there are z and z prime terms. And from the fact of from the statement of commutativity, it's easy to check that all these terms are total derivatives. So these operators commute with these fields X sub s commute with integrals of motion. All right. Now I want to show that operators defined this way, X sub s, if I add them to action or make a deformation with the help of these operators, then the deformed theory still have this integrals of motion. Okay? So consider, so I make this deformation, then according to my deformation formula, well, first of all, I start with some integrable theory in which correlation functions are denoted by the symbol sub zero, and the statement of integral of motion is again vanishing of this contour integral. So if I take some deformation, which is variation of some of these coordinates, and I put this symbol zero plus delta A, which basically reminds us about the deformation of the theory, then as I said, by deformation formula, this is the original correlation function plus the correlation function plus the correction delta gs with the integration of x sub s. And I ignore these local terms which which correspond to deformation of the individual operators, because it will be seen that they are irrelevant in this consideration. Okay, so that's we basically want to show that that in the deformed theory, this is zero or can be transformed to zero. All right, so let's consider these two terms. The first term is zero because it's a conservation law in the unperturbed theory. And in the second term, I want to split the integration over W, the where the perturbation is inserted, into two parts. One the integration over, so if the contour C is this, the D is inside the contour, and D prime is a complement outside the contour. Okay, so if W sits outside the contour, of course the contour remains trivial and can be shrunk to zero. So the term with the D prime there is zero, and if W sits here, then the contour can be collapsed on W, and then it reduces to the commutator of P and X of P and X of W, and we have seen that it is zero up to total derivative, so it always can be written down as a combination of W and W bar derivative of some other fields, which I denote theta and theta, T and theta hat. And of course, I mean, once you have the contribution of this term, we find that this correlation function in deformed theory is expressed in terms of the similar contour integral of these new fields. There must be hat over here. I forgot to put it. So it's just describes the deformation of the densities under this shift. So if I redefine the densities this way, this is going to be an integral of motion in the perturbed theory. So for this part, I put the conclusion here, which basically states that for any integrable field theory, I can generate infinite dimensional family of deformations which preserve integrability. Yes? What's that? Well, in some sense, yes. But generally speaking, I don't know. I mean, the relevant and the irrelevant, of course, this classification refers to some fixed point. And I'm trying to be a generic point of the field theory, so there is no such classification. And one person's irrelevant is another person's relevant operator. All right, let me make a couple of remarks here, and before elaborating some details. First of all, it looks like the whatever ultraviolet regularization is there, it doesn't seem to spoil this analysis. So what either it's local or either it's renormalizable or not. I mean, the formally the integrals of motion are still there. Now, the other remark is I did deal with local integrals of motion. Some two-dimensional integrable theories have some quasi-local integrals of motion, which are based by some sort of parafermionic currents, and the analysis seems to extend to those as well. So probably the full basis in this tangent space to integrable field theory should involve the operators X sub S plus similar operators built from parafermionic currents.
Sorry, can I just ask a question? So
right.
How generic is this perturbation? I mean, this is one integrable perturbation, right?
Right.
Are there infinitely other? Or
if you have infinitely many local integrals of motion, you have as many perturbations, basic vectors in this space. All right.
No more perturbation. This is all because you constructed this.
No, I mean I'm not insisting that it's exhaustive list, but it's already infinite because of the paradigm of integrability. Plus, I mean, it could be completed in some cases by parafermionic, something which is built similar way from parafermionic currents. And then I believe that it's more or less close to complete basis. But I don't have proof of that.
If you minimum models, if they take the Lomov path of pi 1 t, does it count as a parafermionic current?
Yeah, I mean, if I take 1 3, then basically you have a conserved current for every odd number, right? So, yeah, it is Well, I mean, there is a little bit of additional part. I mean, of course, these are not parafermionic currents, but right. And then it's more complicated to see how it works with currents with non-trivial monodromy. That I don't think I know how to do up to the end. But it presumably then. If I want to put exhaustive list, then I need to include those. You are right. But what I believe is true is that if I take local currents and parafermionic currents, I can exhaust the bulk part of this space with probably some finite dimensional part left unaccounted for. Okay. So another statement is that in this analysis, I don't really need to have scalar operators. I can consider perturbations with operators which have some non-zero spin, okay, and the whole analysis would go through as well, and that kind of generates perturbations which break Lorentz invariance, and probably that would be some way to get a link with, let's say, lattice integrable theories or something like that. Okay, so there is another part of this story which I want to briefly describe, and that concerns with factorizable S matrices, form factors. And so this integrable deformations can be identified in terms of form factors. I'm not going to be very systematic. I just remind you that with massive integrable theories, one can associate scattering matrices, factorizable scattering matrices with known properties, like conservation of the set of rapidities, or number of particles, set of rapidities, and so forth. So that the whole S matrix is built in terms of two-body S matrix, elementary two-body S matrix, and this S matrix, that is this two, the two-body S matrix satisfies certain basic equations, including but I'm not going to describe them. I just remind you that these equations admit a famous CDD ambiguity, that you can, given an S matrix, you could multiply it by a scalar factor subject to some conditions. So locally, this CDD factor can be written as exponential of something, where this something admits expansion in terms of expansion of this kind of Fourier expansion of this sort. This will be useful later. Anyways, suppose I have some integrable field theory and I make some perturbation of it. One can, in principle, think in terms of what is called form factor perturbation theory. And if I want to see how this perturbation affects the S matrix, I can use the S matrix version of the deformation formula, which basically says that the variation of the scattering amplitude, some n to m scattering amplitude, is proportional to the integral of the matrix element of the perturbing operator between the in and out states. All right, and this integral, of course, produces, as usual, energy momentum delta function. So I may ask the question, is it possible to perturb in such a way that the S matrix remain factorizable, purely elastic, and so forth? And that would mean that on the energy momentum surface enforced by this delta function, the associated matrix elements over here have to vanish. Okay? Now, these matrix elements over here are known as form factors, right? And these form factors, in turn satisfy, I mean, they can they satisfy a certain system of linear equations, form factor bootstrap equations, which I just pay specific attention on this. The form factors are basically this matrix elements, and the matrix elements of the previous slide over here are obtained by crossing symmetry transformation of those. And for me, the important part will be this annihilation pole equation, which basically says that if I have some scattering amplitude and there is a particle in the initial state and final state with the same or close rapidities, then at theta 1 minus theta 1 prime going to 0, there is a pole associated basically with this intermediate propagator over here. That's a kind of peculiarity of one-dimensional kinematics here. Well, this is, of course, a linear system of equation, so there is a vector space of solutions of this equation, and it's generally assumed, and in many cases confirmed, that the space of solutions is the same as the space of local fields. In this, because the fields themselves do not enter this equation, so there is the space of solutions is essentially listing the solution is essentially listing the field. Okay, so we want a special solution of that, such that if I take this form factor and specify it to the energy momentum surface, they are going to vanish, right? So I mean, this is basically, roughly speaking, this suggests that we have to consider form factors which have this property that the whole energy momentum factor can be extracted from it. And indeed, I mean, it's easy to see that this ansatz with the momenta factor is, of course, goes through all these linear equations. And so there is a subspace of solutions of this form. Now, of course, the part of the solutions are just derivatives of the operators, right? Because if I take a derivative, the appearance of such factor is trivial. Now, it turns out that because, again, of this annihilation pole thing, there are solutions which have this form, but nonetheless are not derivatives. Namely, the form factors specified to energy momentum surface are zero for all, for number of legs greater than four, but not zero for n equals to four. And this is because when the number of legs is four, the energy momentum surface coincides with the locus of the poles of the annihilation pole condition. And then, so in this case, the annihilation poles of this factor cancel the zeros of the energy momentum surface. I'm not going to show this in details, but as a result, we have a...
You must have the same thing for 3 to 3, right? When you say n bigger than 4, there is a difference probably between 2 to 4 or 3 to 3, you know? Because 3 to 3, you don't want to be zero, right?
3 to 3? When you do this perturbation theory, okay, I of course keep this bulky details, but you first have to sort out the disconnected terms. After I did this, the connected part to the correction to 3 to 3 must vanish if I want to preserve integrability, right?
But factorization is not the same as connected terms, is it?
No, perturbatively it is. I mean, in the leading order.
In the leading order it is.
Yeah, if you have a 3 to 3, right? Of course there is a disconnected, I mean, if you want this 3 to 3 elastic scattering, there is a disconnected part. So those are already sorted out, and I'm talking about connected terms. This formula, of course, which I mentioned here, it concerns connected parts. Okay? All right, anyway, there is some way to calculate the correction to the scattering amplitude this way. And so in particular case of Sine-Gordon model, it turns out that it is possible to sort out this special solutions, all the special solutions, and they indeed correspond. They indeed are listed in terms of a basis which correspond to spins of integrals of motion, and associated. So these are, I mean, there is some explicit form of the item. I don't have enough material now to express those things explicitly, but you could list the special solutions. They have the same spins as expected from this list of X sub S. And moreover, the correction to the S matrix is indeed shown to be correction to CDD factors. All right, so this is some independent support of this statement. It's specifically done for Sine-Gordon model, but probably something Sine-Gordon model vicinity of Sine-Gordon model. So that's how it looks from that point of view. Now, let me make a couple of more remarks. And okay, so let me remind you that these operators x sub s are defined as the limits of this thing. So if I form this operator product, it's x sub s up to derivatives. I can take expectation value of this condition, and if I assume that my system or state is space-time homogeneous, then of course derivative expectation values of derivatives vanish, and I have the expectation value of this thing is going to be a constant which is equal to the expectation value of this field x sub s. So this two-point correlation function is expected. Now, that also allows one to express expectation value of x sub s. If I assume that there is a space infinity, like in infinite flat space or in any geometry where I have homogeneous space-time and admitting infinity, I can bring these 2 points infinitely far apart and separate this left-hand side here into expectation values of the factorized expectation values of the currents themselves. This in particular is true in the geometry of space-time cylinder, Euclidean cylinder, with some finite circumference, which is homogeneous and also has infinity. And in that case, this equation holds for expectation value understood as a diagonal matrix element between any eigenstates of energy momentum, as long as these eigenstates are non-degenerate. It's not difficult to show that. Now, this calls for some progress. If I take, for instance, a coordinates in the space of integrable field theories in which these operators x sub s are tangent to the coordinate lines, so that in some sense the derivative of the formal action is expressed directly through this operator, then of course this is a correction to the Lagrangian, obviously it relates to the correction of to Hamiltonian, and then variation of the energies are just diagonal matrix elements of the perturbation as usual, and so they are related to the expectation value of the currents. Unfortunately, in general integrable theory, there is no way to evaluate explicitly and in general form this expectation values, but there is one special case in which it is possible, and that's the one which corresponds to s equals to 1, in which case we just have we are dealing with the components of the energy momentum tensor. Thus to say that operator x1 is not trivial, it's this combination of components of the energy momentum tensor here. Theta is the trace, and T and T bar are light cone components of the energy momentum. So the expectation value of this field, according to my arguments, is going to be this combination, or in Cartesian coordinates, the combination like this. Of course, these expectation values are now easily expressed in terms of energy density in one or another channel, and then this expectation value is this one is energy density, this one is energy density in the cross channel where you interchange space and time, so it's expressed in terms of the derivative of the free energy. And so we have this explicit expression for for the expectation value in terms of energy. Here P is a momentum, which is some integer divided by R by quantization rule. So that if I take this model, I find that my all my energies satisfy this Burgers type equation, where T is this G1. And except for if you have non-zero momentum, you have some unhomogeneous, more or less trivial unhomogeneous term. But you could drop it, so you have this. No matter if this unhomogeneous term is present or not, we know that that solutions of such equation have a tendency to develop shocks. All right, so that means basically that when time changes, time is the, some sort of coupling constant, the ground state energy at some finite value of R is going to develop some singularity. And that is the presence of such singularities was observed, I think, for many already decades ago, that if you take some generic, just arbitrary S matrix with some arbitrary mixture of CDD poles, and start doing thermodynamic Betanzatz calculation. I think we did this with Alyosha for many models, and the tendency was that if you start with at sufficiently large scales, it's fine, but then at some shorter scale, it develops a singularity, and the singularity, we did analyze the singularity carefully, and it always was a square root. So it's in full compliance with the idea of this equation developing shocks, so that it would do something like this with the square root singularity developing in this way. And so we see the same phenomenon from different, a little bit different direction. And I must say, I still don't understand the nature of this phenomenon. Does it mean breakdown of unitarity or locality or what kind of pathology field theory? Or maybe not a pathology, but some unimaginable beauty instead. but it's still unimaginable, and so I say this is this to me this looks like a puzzle, and this example with the G1 or Burgers equation offers some different direction of approach to this puzzle. Thank you.
The perturbation that arises to the Tyson model is of this type, right?
What's that?
The perturbation that arises on the Tyson slicing is T bar.
Yeah. It is of this type. Yes.
Does it mean that the energy of the TDA for the Tyson for that flow?
It doesn't, because I mean, look, if you have a TT bar as a most relevant of the irrelevant operators at the bottom of the flow, the whole thing depends on the mixture of subleading of yet more irrelevant operators, right? So this particular flow which generates this Burgers equation is very particular, is very specific choice of this subleading operators. And because the subleading operators are also, a lot of them are integrable. You could make a variation in this mixture, still keeping integrability. So this flow from one fixed point down to another is one choice, which is obviously ultraviolet sound. And but you could still make an integrable deformation, which now corresponds to this shockwave equation, and that's different integrable theory.
Is it possible to write finite solution to the Schrödinger equation by EVA?
Yes. Yes, I mean, you could derive the same equation using some, basically the same TBA. I said that the effect of these things is a CDD factor. So you could choose the CDD factor in such a way that that it reproduces the same equation. It's actually very easy. I mean, if you take a basically, your TBA equation is determined in terms of this phi of theta, which is a derivative of the scattering phase, roughly speaking, right? So I make a deformation by adding here some delta G1 quasi and theta, right? All right, then I mean, if I plug it into the TBA equation, it's, you could see it's solved immediately. All right, but still, I mean, the physics of it is not very clear.
So you mentioned the form factors in the sine coordinate model.
Right.
So they are all explicitly known.
In some ways, yes. I mean, there is a series of works of Federer with Miwa and Jimbo, right, who basically found some algebra of operators acting in the space of solutions. And this algebra basically consists of commutations with higher integrals of motion plus certain fermions. And in terms of these fermionic operators, there is explicit description how these operators act on the form factor. So you have a kind of algebra of operators which bring one solution to form factor bootstrap to another solution. All right. So that's the way to describe the full space of form factor of full space of operators and their form factors. Now, as far as the special solutions are concerned, there is some special subspace. I think I need to define the algebra, but there is explicit description of that subspace. Yes.
Can you get a two-point function from the form factors?
Well, as a formal series with unevaluatable integrals, yes. Well, in that sense, I mean, every field theory is solvable in terms of sum of Feynman diagrams.
I just wanted to make sure I understood the answer to David's question. So the point was that if you prove the TT bar is not what we normally call TT bar, because what we could normally call TT bar is a combination of various S's. No. I misunderstood. So this, normally we don't form this shop. We don't contract it, we're like and everything is okay.
Okay, so let me be a little bit more specific. So you have some flow from somewhere down to Ising critical point. All right, let's say C equals to 1/2. Okay, so now this one goes along some vector along which it enters there. It is, the vector itself is dt bar plus some higher irrelevant operators. Let's say, let me be more specific, dt bar squared plus other term. Okay? Now, I mean, among this or this possible irrelevant operators over here are infinitely many possible integrable operators. Of course, I mean, this flow must be composed of this integrable operator. All right. So, but but this one goes along TT bar at the fixed point. If I choose some point along the flow, then my notion of energy momentum tensor will be specific for this point, not this point. And then if I take TT bar relative to this one, it will basically, and try to expand it in the basis associated with this one, it will produce something like this. What I'm saying is that this shockwave equation is, let me call it capital T bar, okay, minus the theta squared, all right, associated with this point. So I choose my coordinate system in such a way that the tangent to the trajectory is going to this line is always going to be TT bar, this one, in terms of a given theory, not in terms of something which is a destiny point of this flow. All right. So that is the description of this subset of models which lead to this Burgers equation thing. Now, the fact that this is not the same as the flow from tricritical to critical is obvious, right? The flow from tricritical to critical is no shock solution. Yes, go ahead.
Does the result of your analysis prohibit the possibility of having some isolated integral quantum pieces or integral quantum pieces of this finite number of dimensions?
Again, depends on what we mean by field theory. If I ignore this possible ultraviolet difficulties, so I'm told to tolerate cutoff, then it's not possible. I mean, if it's given a field theory, I can always compute a deformation, which preserves this integral of motion. I mean, if I didn't make mistake, but the calculations were in front of you. So, I mean, watch my hand. All right. So, but if you are talking about a much more interesting question of truly the normalizable theory where you could shrink the cutoff to zero, then of course the situation is much more complicated, and not only the difficulties in describing the space of integrable theory, but the difficulty in the first place there is in describing the space sigma itself. And of course, the tangent is much more complicated notion, and so forth. So, in fact, I think the motivational chain is different. I think the motivation for this study was attempt to understand geometry of local field theories in general, and take the space of integrable subspace of integrable field theories as a model of that. So this is kind of preparatory space. Step to that kind of analysis, if at all possible. Mm-hmm.
So, maybe silly question, but you've described the mathematical signature shock, but what would be the first of the physical signature of the shock? So, you said you've done some calculations of finite temperature, and this is implied.
All right, I tell you. Yeah. I mean, this is, I can speak only in terms of phenomenology. Right, what happens, I cannot say much about what it means. So I solve the TBA equation, all right, and it's usually solved iteratively. You start with some approximation for large sizes, and then you iterate, and you get yourself some. E naught of R, and this is R. All right. So you basically start with some linear behavior, and then it goes like this. And generally, what you expect is if you had a fixed point, let's say behind, you would expect to have something like this. What happens, in fact, is that it goes like this and develops a singularity for majority of CDD factors which you throw in, for basically for all except few special choices. It develops a square root singularity of this sort. You can even analytically continue beyond that, okay, and see what, try to see what happens, and well, generally you cannot go too far, but it's very clearly a square root singularity. So what it means, basically, I mean, formally speaking, if I go beyond shorter than some scales, my ground state energy becomes complex. All right? Okay, I could say, all right, that probably means some instability is developing. Okay, so, well, first of all, it's like a level crossing, and then there are some complex values. There is some instability developing, which breaks unitarity, and so that's speculation. That's not a conclusion. But that's one possibility, but it still needs to be explained what exactly happens here. And if I look at this shock equation, it basically shows another branch of this solution, which sort of behaves again as a straight line with completely weird slope, which I couldn't identify with anything useful in the original theory.
It's not an excited state.
Hmm?
It's not an
I mean, if it was an excited state, it would probably come from something.
Yes,
so it's some excited state which comes from the hell instead of.
But it looks like a number, a new number to the
bottom. Yeah, if you will. I mean, if you will, there is in fact. I mean, you could try to analyze that. What I did is analyze it in conformal field theory, in the limit of large central negative central charge, right, where some explicit calculation is possible, you could find some effective action for that. And then, indeed, this generically for sufficiently large r, I mean, the effective potential doesn't have a bottom, but the physical domain where things live are separated from this hell by infinite barrier. But at certain r, the small hole emerges between our world and that world. But what I mean, that's the property of the equation. But what it really means, I have no idea. And how small the small hole has to be safe, I don't know. I mean, it's. I don't want to speculate. I'm unprepared to this sort of discussion.
Are you saying that the models you consider cannot be lattice regularized?
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm not saying that. If I have some cutoff in mind, all right, I can simply hide it.
No.
The whole thing this way, right? Yeah, so my question, as usual, is: can I move this one all the way down to?
So you seem to be saying you can't move a couple below some.
I don't know. I mean, unless you guys tell me. All right. I mean, that's such and such physics. It's perfectly understood, and it's actually very good for the theory to have this. Then I would say yes, but I don't know.
How does the
ground
energy
behave for something
that is non-unitary static, like the Young-Lee?
What's that again?
If it behaves like the Young-Lee here, something that is not unitary.
Right.
How does the energy behave as a
if you are talking ground state energy, yes. It behaves more or less this way. I mean, take Young-Lee, all right, which is local field theory, so there is no anything like this. So it behaves like this.
Okay, so unit is not unitary.
If you just look at the ground state energy, you cannot see, the problem with unitarity at all. It's when you take some excited levels, they can do something like this. They break into complex conjugate pairs at some finite R, and then they merge again, or emerge in some different combinations.
Okay,
and then they form this conformal spectrum in the UV. So in the middle, they do this, you know. Yeah. It's something which they do in the, yeah. So if you look at the excited levels, it's the non-unitarity is clearly visible.
But did you sort of think of forming that?
What's that?
When you say that it stopped, you mean that it turned back the same
level? Yes. I mean, they do the level. This is level crossing.
Okay, right?
Yeah, this is they do something like this.
Oh. So the ground state is behaving as bad.
The ground state is.
Or is that a theory? It's like the
what was your question again? I'm sorry.
Sorry, so this ground state for this bad theory indicates the way it
exists. In some ways, yes, but except for it's just like I say, it sort of thinks that it picks up something from below, for which I don't have a good explanation. No, I don't have good explanation now.
But an excited state, I mean, this looks less weird than a ground state, right? An excited state would disappear if another state is here, right?
Well, it's not disappearing, it becomes a complex conjugate pair. It's still there, it's just a complex eigenvalue.
So how do I understand that for Young Lee, the ground state has not become complex? Is there a physical reason or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just fact of the life. I mean, look, if I take the same Young-Lee theory, okay, in infinite volume, then the whole spectrum is real. And I mean, tell me why.
But so, are there non-unitary theories worse than Young-Lee, for which the ground state is also?
Well, in finite size, what I said about Young-Lee is typical for non-unitary theories, of course, yes, integrable or not. As for ground state, it's actually. See, if you go to Young-Lee point, from Ising point to Young-Lee point, right? If you are a little bit below Young-Lee point, you have this picture just like I say, right? But you can go above Young-Lee point, and then your ground state is a complex conjugate pair, of course. So, if you want, both possibilities are there. So in some ways, the Young-Lee is a complex spinodal, right?
Okay, so that's nice to touch again.
Thank you.